Oh, hey, Dave. How'd it go?
Well, I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is the guy in Bartertown did have a 3D copy of the movie.
Okay. What's the bad news?
He didn't have any 3D glasses. I'm really sorry.
Oh, man. I was looking forward to this one, too.
What's going on? Why do you look so sad, Ryan?
Dave said he knew a guy in Bartertown who had a 3D copy of Part 3, but he wound up not having any 3D glasses. Can you believe that?
Part 3? Part 3 of what?
Friday the 13th, of course.
What was that?
Who cares? We can't watch the movie! Everything's ruined! How the hell are we gonna celebrate the holiday now?
Oh, thank God! That sucks, guys. I'm so disappointed.
I know, Mike, I know. Which is why we're gonna watch Friday the 13th, the final chapter, remastered in 4K Deluxe Scream Factory Collector's Edition.
Oh, shit! Fuck yeah, Ryan! That's what I'm talking about!
God damn it. I mean, oh, yay! More Jason movies! I can't wait! I'm literally brimming with excitement.
That's the spirit, Mike. Way to go, Ryan. Turn a negative into a positive. I like it. Yeah.
How many more Friday the 13ths are there this year?
Not enough, my friend. Not nearly enough.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare. Only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Reloaded. Beginning playback.
Three times before, you have felt the terror, known the madness, lived the horror. But this is the one you've been screaming for. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Jason is back. He moves like a shadow. Dark and silent.
Sorry, you changed your mind?
He never utters a word. He doesn't even seem to breathe. He simply, mindlessly, mercilessly, kills. But now, Jason's reign of terror is over. Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Friday, April 13th, is Jason's unlucky day.
Okay, that was Friday the 13th, the final chapter. I'm your host, David Snyder, and joining me again as we celebrate the first so-called final chapter, and or Friday, our fellow cinephiles and dead fucks, Ryan.
I'm so horny.
Our man in the machine, or Zaxxon, if you prefer, Chad.
If you require a bypass patch cord for your video game needs, I would be happy to assist, Dave.
Not right now, Chad, but thanks. And finally, our resident Friday the 13th sourpuss, now possibly Friday superfan, Mike.
Where the hell's the corkscrew? Ted? Where's the corkscrew?
Ted?
Where's the corkscrew, Ted?
Oh my God. Crispin Glover, is it fair to say that he, I mean, maybe in addition to Corey Feldman, he's a big part as well, but is it fair to say that Crispin Glover makes this movie?
I think it's at least like two of the stars of the five.
His dancing is pretty good.
It's definitely it's probably arguably the most iconic scene from this movie is his dance, which it's funny too. Like, I didn't realize this, but diving into the special features, what he's actually dancing to in that scene is AC/DC. He's dancing to AC/DC music. So as he's doing like his weird gyrations and stuff, he's not dancing to like the generic sounding 80s rock music that we hear in the movie. It's
this
actually AC/DC.
This is good.
Because it's good. It's good.
There's something weirder about imagining those dance moves to AC/DC. Like, that's almost like...
It almost makes it weirder, right?
Right. Because AC/DC, I'm trying to imagine, like... Like, what? Like, what did they say what song it was? Like, most AC/DC songs aren't really, like, dance songs.
I don't think they did. This came out in 1984, and at that time, that was actually kind of AC/DC's sort of dip a little bit. Like, a few years prior, in 1980, they had Back in Black, which was one of the most successful rock albums of all time. They followed it up with For Those About to Rock, which is also pretty successful. But then after that, they had like Flick of the Switch, which I'm looking at both you guys now, and I'm just seeing blank expressions. You've never heard of Flick of the Switch, and that's understandable. I enjoy that album personally because I'm a big AC/DC fan, but it's
are you
not
an AC/DC
one of their more
fan?
Successful efforts. Oh yeah, big time. They're my favorite band growing up.
Really? Huh.
Frequently see me doing similar dance moves to AC/DC as Crispin Glover.
Yeah, as an AC/DC fan, I guess do those dance moves track then?
No, I'm just joking. No, they absolutely do not. I don't think of AC/DC as dance music. It's just like. AC/DC is the type of music when you go to the concert, you're the guy that's just like pumping your fizz, like, yeah. You're not doing these weird, like, gyrations. You know?
If you're someone like Crispin Glover, that's what you feel when you're listening to music.
And you know what? That's what makes this scene so special, because he's the type of person who could bust out dance moves to an AC/DC song.
No, I think he had to be like, this guy's a treasure when they were shooting. They're like, we have to have more of him. Let's just put the camera on him, do what he wants to do.
What are like the notable roles of Crispin Glover?
Well, it's funny, like both Crispin Glover and Corey Feldman would both go on to star in a Steven Spielberg produced movie 1 year after this. Actually, no, that's not true. Corey Feldman in this same year, this was the 84 through 86, 88 was like just those are like peak Corey years. Like 84 was Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Was that like his Macaulay Culkin run in the 90s? Like the
it was
you got
man.
Page Master
yeah.
and Home Alone.
In this for Corey, he had Friday the 13th. He had Gremlins the same year in 1984, which was a Spielberg produced movie. And then obviously the following year he would star in The Goonies. And then in 86 he'd be in Stand By Me. And then I think in a couple years after that, he would be in The Burbs in like in kind of a small but memorable role in that movie, too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Crispin Glover would star in Back to the Future a year later. And then he would be in archival footage in Back to the Future Part 2, because I'm sure all you know, he wasn't actually in Back to the Future Part 2 or 3. He was a double.
And they put like a mask on him. Like they took his face and like fucked up. And he started all the laws of like, make sure you get paid for that stuff.
I heard that like,
for archival footage and stuff.
What is Crispin Glover like what happened to his film career after Back to the Future?
He went on Letterman and went crazy and like
what did he do? What did he do on Letterman?
He like shows up in these big platform shoes and he seems like he's on drugs or something and really makes Letterman all uncomfortable. And I think like kind of was almost like a Joaquin Phoenix-esque type of guy. Like, but like the character that Joaquin Phoenix plays in I'm Still Here. Is that the name of it? Yeah.
I'm not here.
I can totally see that.
I notice you have something there in the case.
I
I knew that this was going to happen, and I can I tell you, because the press, they can do things, they can twist things around, and I, because the, you're talking, I don't, look, I, the press says things about you in the paper. This is a paper, the LA Weekly in Los Angeles, and they said about me, la-di-da, it was at, I went to a club, and they said that, it was at a meeting, and it said Crispin Glover, who was in a frenzy, though his bark is actually worse than his dot, dot, dot. You get the point. Mm-hmm. And
Paul, anything then, you'd like to add here?
And then another one, they said Crispin Glover,
Paul,
was
is this the first time you've seen another guy drown? Is this the first time you've watched a guy die?
Is that you're talking about, you or
yeah,
him?
Yeah, no, me.
This is the other thing. They said Crispin Glover was pinstriped and greased up for the occasion, impressing the girl things who are trying to get next to him. Guess some people are turned on by Brill Cream.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
And then they...
It's like basically the real life Crispin Glover story is that.
Because
he's in Charlie's Angels. He's the villain in that later. He's in, Wilford? The remake of Wilford?
Willard. I think it's Willard, the rat movie where he controls the rats.
Oh my God, I saw that movie like when it came out. I haven't thought about it since I saw it in theaters like 25 years ago.
He kind of like just starts making his own movies, and I've never seen him, but he makes these weird art movies, and they're just, you know, off the wall. I don't know.
He's what you'd refer to as a experimental filmmaker.
Interesting.
But
well... I hope he translates his dance moves from this movie into... I could see the beginnings of that impulse in this movie.
Dave, you probably... Because you're more familiar with all these movies than I am. I mean, I've seen most of them, but... Is he the best actor that has been, like, the teens of any of these movies? Like, do you think?
I mean...
As far as, like, just a
is
kind
he
of
a
pops.
Good actor? Or is he just, like...
I think so. I think
I
he
think
is.
He's, like, an a bizarre presence, but I would hesitate to say he's, like, a great... I mean, it's a good performance. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's more just like he brings
committed.
A weird energy to it.
Yes,
he's like
I think it's more
guy.
Like he's. I think it's more he's just he's making a mindful choice. He's not just like you know, when you look at the past movies, like I enjoyed the final girl in part two. I thought she was good. If you remember her, she's the one with the child psychology major, and she has. Oh, don't shake your head, Mike. She was good. You're talking about Jitty here, okay? She had a psych major, and she outwitted Jason in the end of part two. Anyway, but aside from her, like, the acting in these movies hasn't exactly been that great. But Crispin Glover makes, like, a conscious choice in this movie, and while you can argue maybe it's not necessarily good acting, it's interesting acting.
And also,
to
he's
the point
his own
where,
guy. He's not just your typical virgin guy or whatever he is, you know?
He's not, like, the cookie-cutter character that we're used to in these movies. Like, he's making an actual choice. He's doing something different. And it's actually the reason why his character gets a lot more exposure in this movie. He wasn't originally supposed to have all of these scenes. Like, on set, and I think it might have been during this dance sequence, the director was just like,
here.
He's like, this guy is doing something, and the camera loves him, and it's, again, we don't know if it's good acting, but it's interesting. It's something. It's experimental, man. So they actually beefed up his role because of the way he was playing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's funny. But I thought that I've seen these, like, I always grew up watching these on cable, you know, like Friday 13th marathons on AMC and stuff, but I don't think I had ever seen this one, and I may have caught pieces, but it's surprising me that I don't think I've seen this one. And it's funny because
which ones have you seen? Like, can you confirm which ones can you confirm that you've seen?
I know now that I've seen the first six movies, in bits and pieces of
the
following
first six.
Ones. And then I don't think I've seen Jason Goes to Hell. I don't think I've seen that one. But I know I've seen the one when he fights Carrie, at least bits and pieces of it. That's the next one. Right? Or is that the eight? Which one is it?
That's part seven. Yeah, it's called
like
The New
the
Blood.
Stephen King Carrie?
And just to clarify for Mike, who is unaware, it's not actually Carrie. It is just a... a girl who also happens to be blonde. Or actually, was Carrie? Yeah, she was blonde in the movie.
Yeah.
With telekinetic powers. He fights a girl who has telekinetic powers.
Is there ever a point in the movie where she gets covered in blood?
No.
Okay.
There is not.
Okay, tasteful.
They didn't want to go too far with the copycat there.
But yeah, and then I've seen probably, out of, what is it, there's 12 of them, right, including the remake? Or is it 13?
I think it's 12, yeah. 12.
I've probably seen, now after watching this, and I think I've seen probably 10 of them, or maybe 9, you know, so.
And is this top half or bottom half for you?
Oh, this is top. Like, this is great. Like, this was kind of like the, probably at least from what my experience of recently kind of watching a few of them, probably the last one that, I mean, it's cheesy, you know, slasher stuff, but actually tries to go for a little bit of spookiness to it. And then after this, Jason becomes a cartoon character. And especially in fucking 6, which I just watched too. And it's like, where I can't believe that damn, he's like the main character of the movie. Of that one. Like, and you see him like straight up clear as day. Like, they're not trying to hide him or anything like that. It's just like, he's just, you see him coming and he's gonna kill you.
To me, this, like, part 4, the final chapter, represents like the end of, I guess, what I would call the pure
final
Jason
chapter
movie.
You would say,
yes, it's you know, it kind of like closes the door on this era of Jason before he would become a cartoon character, where it feels like it's the most true to the original elements of the first,
the classical Jason era.
Classical Jason, yeah. Not necessarily, it's, I mean, I guess we'll get into this as we discuss the movie, but like, he's still technically a human in this movie, a hard to kill human, but not superhuman necessarily. It kind of rides the line.
He definitely has something supernatural going on, like,
in this one,
a little bit, but it's, he's,
he
not
comes
like,
back to life in the beginning of the movie,
but he's just not dead. He just wasn't dead.
Well, I mean, he was dead.
No, he's just...
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean. This one kind of skirts that line where it's just like, clearly, if you take... Well, first off, he probably would have been killed in the second movie. He had a machete, like, down his shoulder into, like, nearly his chest. So that would have killed him by blood loss. But maybe you could make the argument that he survived. I don't know. But
he's, at least if he survives that, he's not going to be as mobile and effective as a killing machine.
Well,
if he were a real human,
he's going through like years of physical therapy to come back from it.
Yeah, but you're, compared to 2 movies later, where he gets struck by lightning and comes back to life and is just like a total zombie that's like running and like teleporting and
it
doing
sounds
crazy
like Looney
shit.
Tunes.
In a way, it hit a little bit. But yeah, I loved it. I had so much fun, and it reminds me so much of like the. Video game, because we've been playing that a little bit recently, and it's just like this kind of the epitome of like this type of movie, I feel like. And it's still, there's some good little kills, and it's funny still. I don't know, what about, because this is your first time, Mike, did you, I know you haven't really liked these movies that much prior.
No, so I've seen the first 2 for the show, and I didn't really, I mean, I didn't hate them, but this was my favorite by far. I like this one a lot. I feel like they kind of like, I don't know, maybe they just kind of like knew what they were doing. Because it wasn't like different really than the other two. It just felt better. Like the characters were more defined. I think I like that there was something going on besides just teens. Like, it was like teens next to a family, and that was an interesting dynamic.
They add something to it for sure.
Yeah, like having the scenes where like the family's kind of like seeing the teens, like Corey Feldman's like looking across the window at like the teens like making out and stuff. It added like an angle to it that I liked, and maybe kind of like replicated some of the like the kid watching like Friday the 13th kind of thing, like they're not supposed to watch it kind of thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. That it's kind of like they do who kind of has been liking these movies is that Corey Feldman kid that was like us having it on in our bedrooms on AMC at like 1 a.m. With our hands on the remote in case our parents walked in to like turn it off or something, you know?
Yeah, and Like, that was great. And Crispin Glover was just so weird. There hasn't been a, like, performance like that in any of these movies that stood out. That was cool. And I liked the kills. Like, there were some interesting kills this time. And in particular, I like that, like, we get some, like, I like what Jason did with the bodies. Like, after he killed him, he's, like, boarding the house up with the bodies. That was, like, I don't know. For whatever reason, that really stood out to me. It was, like, dang, that's gnarly. Like, the idea, like, when he's, like, on a, like, nailed to the threshold of the house and she can't leave because there's just a
yeah,
dead body
crazy.
Right there. That was a pretty, that was neat. So I don't know. I it's nothing that I thought was, like, earth-shatteringly different. I just thought it was, it just seemed like a better, well-made one of these things. Like, they really knew what they were doing. Yeah, they knew what this was.
Same formula, but new flavor, you know?
Well, it's like they're four in. It seems like this one to me kind of perfectly encapsulates Friday the 13th as a franchise. It has everything you would want in a Friday the 13th movie, and I feel like it does all of those things really well. I think arguably the best in the series, even more so than part one. It's got the tension, it's got the stalking, it's got the gore. Like, I think the best gore in the series up to this point, and arguably the entire series. Inventive kills. It's funny too because it has things that are both almost like you could view as a detriment to the series, but also part and parcel with what it is. Unlikable characters. This has unlikable characters for sure, but it also has likable characters. It balances it out.
Yeah.
Characters that you like, characters that are interesting. It just literally has everything you would want in a Friday the 13th movie.
I like what you said about the gore too, because that was one of my big problems with the first two is that I feel like it was like too shy to show the gore, like for what it was. Like, I wanted, it's not like I wanted like a snuff film, but it was cutting away like too much where I was like, I don't know. I'm not getting what I want, but I feel like this one struck a nice balance where it wasn't like gross, but it was showing some stuff, especially the, Jason kill at the end when he's just sliding down on the knife. Like that was
that's gnarly.
That was done so well. But even like little things where I think it does a better job where it's just implying things without, you know, it's not necessarily that graphic. Like, you're not seeing like entrails spilled out, but shots like when there's the shower kill and just like the shot of the body over the broken glass kind of just like leaning there was like kind of startling more so than anything I remember seeing in the other ones.
Well, there's like really effective cuts in this, and especially in that scene when he kills the guy just simply by breaking through the shower door and just shoving his head
like squeezing
into the
guy's face like a fruit.
Yeah,
it was pretty gnarly.
It's so good because it's like it's one of those things where it's like the whole scene is made in editing, because if like you'd had a few more frames, you would have like really been able to like see how fake the head looked. But just it's kind of like that Jaws effect, like knowing how much of the shark to show. Like, no, you want to cut away just the right moment, and you know, you don't want to get too much of a view of it just to kind of fill in the gaps in your head. So when he pushes the guy's head, it cuts away perfectly. It's enough to like express how fucking gnarly this moment is of him pushing this guy's face into the tile.
And by six, it's basically like, it's like Jaws is on land. Yeah, he's like dancing.
So there's one of the earlier kills. There's like no, if I remember right, there's like not any gore, but it's the one with the hitchhiker. The hitchhiker has
that has gore. Are you kidding me?
Well, the banana.
That's what I'm thinking of. The hitchhiker is great because her sign is like peace, love, Canada, and then the other side just says like fuck you. Like, it's like two. Because there are two options.
She has no lines, and it's like already a great character.
Yeah. but yeah, I mean, and then when you know when she gets killed, she's like eating a banana, and just it really focuses on just like her squeezing the kind of end of the banana. She's like struggling to maintain her life, and the banana falls off
as she gets the knife stuck through her.
I guess there is some gore there, but that banana shot, I was just like, man, that was like the moment where I was like, this might be. Yeah. I really like this. Like, yeah, this is art. This is.
Well, this is the perfect encapsulation. It has all the tropes and things you'd want to see in a Friday the 13th film. But what makes it, I think, the best one of the bunch is that I think it's just a better made movie.
Yeah,
in general,
it looks good.
You know what I
like,
mean?
Like there's a lot of like cool shots at nighttime, especially with the rain. And
it's also got a bigger budget. Obviously, they got a helicopter, man. There's a helicopter in the first scene of the movie.
Yeah, the first scene of the movie is like the beginning of like a almost like a Spielberg opening where it's just like all the stuff is going on and there's the ambulance coming in and.
Oh, the beginning is that kind of montage, like the like our last last greatest.
Well,
hit.
that's a good point, Ryan. You bring up a good point. We just assume that. I mean, I think we take for granted that everyone has seen most of these movies or is aware of Friday the 13th. But as you know, as this is the case with Mike, there are people out there in the wasteland who haven't seen these movies. So I don't know which one of you guys would want to describe the plot of Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
This should have been the first one maybe we show Mike because he just got the greatest hits in the beginning of this one. You know, it would have been perfect, you know.
Ryan, I want to even get the, Ryan, tell the listeners what this movie's about.
Oh geez. Okay. Well, basically Jason Voorhees was a little kid drowned in the lake. I was kidding. No, he basically what happens is we cut the end of start kind of at the beginning of the end of the last movie where Jason got an axe to the head, basically, and he's getting taken to the hospital with the morgue, and he escapes the morgue, of course, where he comes back to life. But was he dead in the first place? And basically, you know, we got our typical kids that rented a cabin that are, it's not quite the camp, Crystal Lake, but it's near there. And they rent a cabin.
It's in a forest.
It's in the forest. It's like, you know, they're wanting to fuck. They're wanting to screw around. It's your typical kind of group.
And, smoke weed. Watch old timey.
Yeah, watch old timey stag films. It's all kinds of things. And, yeah, it seems like a good time. It's like whatever, you know. They seem kind of realistic in a weird way. They want to swim naked in the lake, which is great. That's one of the best things ever. Sorry to go off, but just like Crispin Glover, he has the way his face is, and he's just like, we don't have any suits.
We don't have any suits.
But the way he's smiling while he's doing it, like it's kind of like he's like perfect.
It just, doesn't know. He no, say like he, no, we don't have any suits. Like his whole.
And then they realize that they're all getting naked, and they're like, okay, we're going quick. Let's do it. but it happens to be next to the cabin these kids are renting is a family that lives out there, and it's seems like they have a dead dad, Corey Feldman. He makes monsters.
They have a divorced dad.
Oh, divorced. He's divorced.
Okay. Divorced isn't the same as dead, Ryan. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I must have missed the dead part. But
it's not what my parents told me.
And they just happen to be next to that. And so Jason kind of terrorizes two households at this. And Corey Feldman, Tommy Jarvis is who he plays, who's the character that goes through the next three movies. Or is it two movies, I guess?
Two movies.
Same shenanigans. Jason killing people, you know, because that's what he likes to do. And he has fun doing it. He's evil and he loves it.
He's very much a get off my lawn type of guy.
Yeah. But he has to, you know, we haven't seen him have to deal with a kid that's kind of a smart kid, you know, a little bit of a, maybe a kid that kind of relates to Jason in a way, you know, a little bit of an outsider that might know his secrets. I don't know.
Which makes no sense. We'll get into that. But.
And then there's kind of another little subplot that I feel like is kind of dropped where there's like a guy that is there to hunt Jason. And I feel like there could have been more with that guy. But, there's a lot of things going on, a lot of threads happening in this movie, not just your typical kids wanting to screw in the woods and get killed. There's a lot of little fun things. So,
you brought up a good thing. Like, so far we've been talking about how great this one is. It's probably the best Friday the 13th yet. But you did bring up the character of Rob, the whole idea of the guy searching for Jason, wants to kill him, he wants revenge because Jason killed his sister. But it kind of gets into a whole thing with Friday the 13th as a series. And that's the problem with continuity. The timeline for these movies is very confusing. So this movie actually takes place on Sunday the 15th because it directly follows the previous two movies.
This is false advertising. This doesn't even take place on Friday the 13th.
Well, you got to think, this takes place directly after the events of Part 2 and Part 3. So Part 2 took place on Friday the 13th. The events of that movie unfold.
Did
then,
all of these movies happen in like a couple days?
3 days, yeah.
Oh my god, he just keeps getting back out there and killing. Why is anyone going to the lake? One. It was yesterday that this happened.
Well, no, literally the events, like, yeah, so the events of Friday the 13th Part 2 occur on Friday the 13th. Part 3 occurs directly after the events of Part 2.
So, like, family is driving up, or, like, the kids are driving up to the cabin, like, the ambulance and the morgue are, like, driving the other way back.
We don't know exactly where on Camp Crystal Lake they reside.
This is like my favorite thing about the movie so far. That's amazing.
But yeah, you would think, like, it is a lake, so it's, I don't know how big it is. It's never exactly said. But you would think, even if they were on the other side of the lake, they would be able to hear the sirens, you know.
There's a helicopter.
Like, oh, shit, people just got killed. And there's a helicopter. Yeah, it's like, it's crazy. You're out in the middle of the forest, and there's a fucking helicopter at 2 in the morning. What's going on?
Maybe it's like a Lake Tahoe-sized lake, which is, like, really big in two states.
It would have to be.
I mean, we see the lake. Like, it's not that big. I feel like you can see the other side. Like,
maybe it kind of winds. Maybe it goes like down.
Yeah, maybe it's an oddly shaped, more like an Everglades kind of situation. Nooks and crannies where you can hide.
I didn't realize the timeline of that either. That's crazy.
Well, it's goofy because in this movie, there's this, yeah, the whole subplot with the character Rob. He wants to kill Jason because Jason killed his sister. But when you're watching this movie.
Yesterday.
Like, even if you watch, like, 2, 3, and 4 back-to-back, when you see this character come, he presents these what look like old newspaper clippings of Jason. He explains the timeline, like, yeah, Jason is would-be killer, this, and this. He's connecting the dots. Right. But when you think about it, his sister was killed 2 days ago. But he's out in the forest looking for this killer who was just sent to the morgue yesterday.
Well, is it stated that the point at the actual cabins is the 2 days later? Or is it maybe like, you know, it was 2 days later in the hospital, but then maybe there was time in between where Jason was just hanging out in the woods, you know, gaining energy or something?
No, I don't think so, because so part two ends with Jason getting that machete in his shoulder, and then part three begins literally with him in the shed, like, kind of like, you know, crawling and moving up, and then he, like, kills these people at a general store and steals some clothes. So I guess it's not specifically stated, but you presume that this it had to have happened within the course of 1, maybe 2 days tops.
Is part three good, by the way?
Well, I know we're all excited.
I feel like,
about,
I mean, I should
version.
Say, I'm aware that it's a 3D movie from the 80s, and I know it's not going to be, like, good, but it sounds like it could be pretty good.
I mean, I'm not.
It has its moment.
Me and Ryan were super excited, and I was really pumped to see the 3D version, but I'm not going to lie to you, Mike. If part three did not have the 3D, it would not be a good movie. It has its moments, and it is the movie that introduces the hockey mask to the Jason persona. So it is iconic for that. But
it's crazy
if
that
you
took
take
three
away,
movies for that. But
it's insane. Yeah. You would think it was there from the beginning.
That's the only thing I
but
knew about.
If you were to take
Jason
away,
was the hockey mask.
It's the most popular thing. But if you were to take away the 3D from part three, it's not a good movie. So ultimately, you certainly dodged a bullet. Like, you know what? If we had watched part three, the 3D would have been great, but you probably would have been miserable. It wouldn't have changed your idea of Friday the 13th. You probably would have ended up, like, going into the calendars and, like, removing the date so that I wouldn't know it was Friday the 13th, so we didn't have to watch these movies going forward. But this
it
was
is,
actually
it is
probably
weird that the last 4 consecutive days have been Friday the 13th.
But no, I think this might have been a blessing in disguise, actually, not being able to watch part three, because if we had watched it, you wouldn't have wanted to watch another Friday the 13th, I wouldn't think.
Okay, that's good to hear, because I want to watch another one of these sometime.
See, now I'm glad. See, this is, you know, this is weird. Friday the 13th is a day associated with bad luck, but ultimately, we turned a negative into a positive, guys.
I think the magic of Jason is finally getting to me.
But anyway, back to Final Chapter and the weirdness. Like, yeah, it's like, Imagine being a moviegoer watching Friday the 13th Part 4, Friday the 13th Part 3 was a couple years ago. I think you would forget that, like, I don't think it would occur to you that this guy's sister would have been killed in this timeline 2 days prior.
Yeah,
like, in the movie,
anybody's...
it comes off... I don't know about you guys, but in the movie, it comes off like his sister was killed years ago, and he's, like, been searching and researching and all this stuff, and he wants to kill Jason. He's been doing his homework and all this stuff. But no, it happened 2 days ago, so it's a really confusing timeline.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... It doesn't sound like it's confusing so much as poorly thought out.
Well, yeah, poorly written. They care. Yeah. They're just like, who cares? Who cares?
Cigar.
Yeah, I mean, this was like before the internet. Like, no one's like, who's complaining about this kind of thing?
Just like kids on like is it Fangoria? Was that magazine?
Fangoria. Letters to the editor in Fangoria.
Yeah. Which was basically, you know, the equivalent of like a Twitter or Reddit type of thing, you know, post. But
yeah, it's probably that whole subplot is probably the weakest part of this movie. But thankfully, it's very short. Like, literally, as soon as he encounters Jason, he's immediately killed. And I don't know if you guys picked up on this or not while we were watching it. I've seen this before, so I knew what he was saying. But if you were to turn on subtitles, as he's in that basement, as Jason is killing him, he is literally saying, "He's killing me! He's killing me!" Which in my mind is insane. If someone's killing me, I don't think I would have the forethought to say, "He's killing me! He's stabbing me with the thing!" Like, it's to me, that is such a bizarre moment in this movie where he says, "He's killing me." Who does that?
A character in a movie.
I mean,
As if he's providing like a play-by-play commentary to the girl who's standing
back,
like in the stairwell.
Yeah, for like the visually impaired viewers of the movie, you can
exactly.
Yeah, we don't.
He's
see
killing
him come
me
back
with his knife, and he's wearing the hockey mask from Part 3.
Because maybe they had intentions to just let you know, yeah, he's dead or something that like with the voiceover. You know, they.
Oh, is that what it was? Like, trust us, audience. This guy ain't coming back.
Because they kind of produce him as like maybe he's gonna be like a hero.
Yeah, I like that. Like, he's killing me. I will not be in the later acts of the movie.
Exactly.
I wasn't sad to see that guy go. In fact, to me, that guy he's one of the worst elements in the movie. He sucks. Like, even the unlikable characters, like
the beginning of the movie. What about that doctor? The
pervy, oh, okay.
The,
well,
the like Master Roshi, just like watching like.
Oh yeah, like aerobics videos.
What was like going on in the 80s with like fitness videos? Why was this like weird. Like, this is like
a
cultural
time
capsule.
It was a different time because this was before online porn. So like, if you couldn't get porn, like, I guess I'll watch the aerobics video. I guess I'll look at the fucking Victoria's Secret catalog again. Like,
it was so funny though, like what they were showing. And it's also I will say, as a cinephile, it was a beautiful foreshadowing to have the murder victim in the beginning of the movie looking at these aerobics. Later, of course, again, foreshadowing the third act of the movie where the unlikable victim is watching stag films. It's kind of a, you know, as Lucas would say, it's like poetry. It rhymes. But
this isn't art. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. But... what, like, this, when I was watching this, the fitness video, when he's, like, looking at it, I was thinking, like, this is not, like, did they make this for the movie, or, like, is this an actual fitness video? Like, it didn't look like it would be useful as a fitness video.
Yeah, I'm sure they shot that, you know? Kind of looks like that, for sure. Looks kind of cinematic, too.
But I feel like that was definitely a thing in the 80s, like aerobics videos, like you would watch them Like, I feel like I've seen this in other movies of the era.
I've seen
like
it in Dragon videos. Ball. That's like the like Master Roshi is always watching those. But that's the I feel like the only place I've which is from the '80s. But that's the only thing I feel like I've seen that trope from. Yeah. But yeah, I guess different time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I see. It's like it's something a kid would watch when they because it's you know they can watch their mom's aerobic video and they when they learn about boners and stuff.
But it's interesting. Like I said before, like this movie, it has the unlikable characters. The first among them is this character of Axel, played by the guy. He was in Police Academy. He was like the dorky guy in that. He's also the rabbi in Seinfeld, if you recall.
Wow,
the rabbi with the talk show.
She felt that George was somewhat of a loser, and that she was the one who deserved to be married first. She also happened to mention to me that her friend had wondered if going to a prostitute while you're engaged is considered cheating. His feeling was, they're never going to see each other again, so what's the difference? But that is a subject for another sermon. Now, I'd like to close with a song.
There's a lot of people in Seinfeld.
Basically, everyone was in Seinfeld at one point or another. But Axel is like, he's one of the first characters we see in the movie, and he's probably the most unlikable in the movie. I mean, he's like the typical, like, he's the typical tropey coroner guy who's like eating like a sandwich next to a dead body and he doesn't care. Like, I feel like every movie or TV show, no respect for the dead. He's putting his fucking sandwich on like the top of this corpse as he's filling out the forms and shit.
That was kind of great. Like, I thought that was, it was silly and I appreciate
it. Well, yeah. It's like, again, he's an unlikable character, but like it's fun to watch. Like, yeah. He's the complete opposite of that Rob character who's just, I don't know. I found that character so boring.
Is that the
so
one who's just
written.
Laughing like the whole third act of the movie is just him sitting on the chair laughing?
I don't remember this character. What, laughing at the? Oh no! Rob is the guy who's looking for Jason. He wants revenge.
Oh right.
You're thinking of like the fucking douchey looking guy, the good
Tom.
Looking dude. His
where's
Tom.
The corkscrew?
Yeah, Tom, the famous Tom of where's the corkscrew? Tom.
No, you guys. No, Ted.
Ted,
where's the corkscrew? Ted is the other douchey kid watching the stag films.
Ted, hey, Ted, where the hell's the corkscrew?
That's who. No,
I think
that's
what I'm thinking. I think you were originally thinking of the guy sitting in the background who's like the good looking dude with like the shortest shorts I've ever seen in my life. he's one of the cookie cutter characters. You don't really care about him.
Yeah.
He's the guy that's talking to the girls like, hey, it's none of our business. You know, come back, you know, it's, and he ends up, he's the guy that gets killed in the shower. I think that was the one you were thinking of.
Yeah.
But yeah, as unlikable as some of these characters are, they're at least fun to watch. And Axel gets probably one of the more brutal deaths in the movie. He gets that like hacksaw to his throat, and then Jason literally spins his head around. But this character is so deplorable. Like he's such a horn dog. Like one of his first lines, he goes up to that nurse. He's like, "Hey doc, I'm free in a minute." Like that's such a typical like sexist character thing to say, like with as he's chewing gum, "Hey doll, I'm free in like 5 minutes. You wanna go in the storeroom and fuck?
Wanna go next to some dead bodies in my sandwich?"
Exactly. Name's Buck and I love the fuck. That must have been a thing too. Like that's where Tarantino's pulling that from was probably some B movies of just like horny doctors and nurses and morgue people that like to, you know, bed.
Morgue people.
You know, like one of my favorite characters in the Friday the 13th franchise with the Axel guy, you know, the coroner. Like, I really love that character. I wanted to corner. Get that trope in the beginning part of the couple of the movie.
Dang. Quentin Tarantino showed up at the store.
His essence. Yeah, we summoned him. But yeah, Axel's an unlikable character. We also get, we mentioned before, Ted, where's the corkscrew? The guy watching the stag films.
Ted, where's the corkscrew?
It's so funny, like, these two characters, like, they're kind of the odd men out in this group of kids who are going to this house to just kind of, I don't know, watch stack films and fuck and just go skinny dipping. It's funny, too, because Ted and Jim, the character played by Crispin Glover, are both presented, it's like a joke in the movie. Like, they're walking to the lake, and they're all bummed because, like, you know, everyone else is paired up with, like, a girlfriend, but they're the odd men out. And yeah. as they're stating this, these two twins inexplicably ride up on bikes. Again, like, this movie knows what it's doing. It's a boing moment because the movie knows what it's doing. Like, it's funny too because this movie could be so well written from that perspective, but in other ways poorly written with the whole, like, character wanting revenge. It's interesting.
Yeah,
I mean that what you just said, Dave, is ultimately like what made me like this movie more than the others. Is I feel like at this point they knew what it was and they knew exactly what they were doing. And it had just that right amount of, like, I don't know, like, self-referential or what it is, but it just seemed aware of what this movie is, rather than, like the first one I feel like is, like, it just feels like an imitation of other movies, or, like, they're throwing some shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. The second movie I feel like is, like, well, let's do it again kind of thing. But by this one, it's, like, they knew what was unique about the franchise and, like, blew that up a bit.
Yeah, for sure. And again, yeah, better made. Like, there's that whole kill that I really liked, speaking of the twins, when one of the twins goes outside to leave, it's raining outside, and the camera, like, kind of just pans by her and just sort of, like, focuses on the house, the side of the house, and as the lightning is booming, you see Jason's shadow come, just stab her with, like, this spike or something.
That was that was one of the, like, the shower scene that I talked about earlier. There's parts of this where I'm like,
I can't tell you, Mike, as we were watching this, I can't tell you how pleased I was every time you went while we were watching the movie. It was like it warmed my heart. They were several times when we were watching this where when you would do that, me and Ryan would look at each other and just nod like, we got him.
The Magic of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it is a good one, that rainy thing with the shadow. There's nothing like that before, really, like, kind of artistic kind of thing. Like, they had to plan a shot like that.
They never did anything like that before, you know, kind of artistic and shit.
This whole fucking movie starts with the goddamn Scorsese tracking shot, you know? Like, it's following the helicopter and going through into the barn and shit. Eat your heart out, Scorsese. Fucking Friday the 13th did it first.
It does feel modern. That's kind of cool about it. There's a little bit of modern charm to it.
Should we talk about the end of the movie?
We haven't really talked about the family at all yet, but a little bit. But anyway, like, it kind of ends with just, like, everyone just gets killed every other scene. It's like
it escalates pretty quickly.
The last, like, half an hour of the movie is just one by one.
One after another.
Yeah. And there's a lot of deaths in this movie.
Once Ted... once that where the hell the corkscrew line, I feel like from then to the end of the movie it's just like murder.
and it escalates in brutality too. Like, the Ted wears the corkscrew line stands out to me because it's a two-pronged like death scene. Like, he has his hand, you know, he turns around, he pivots to look back into the living room, where the hell the corkscrew, and Jason comes from behind and stabs his hand with the corkscrew. And then,
like, nails his turns hand around to the table with the corkscrew.
Yeah, so he's sort of stuck there, and then he gets a fucking meat cleaver to the face. And this death stands out to me not only because of the corkscrew line, but I don't know if what really stood out about this sequence was the sound effects. When that cleaver gets stuck in his head, you get a blood squirting sound effect that is just, you know. It's just particularly, like, accentuated.
Do you think that was Tom Savini just, like, recording in, like, an effects booth, like...
Possibly, yeah. But, like, I feel like that death, like, out of all the deaths of the movie, is particularly, like... The sound effect is particularly, like, gooey. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to describe it. But, yeah, the final death in the... I mean, should we just talk about the deaths while we're on the subject?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, were there any that... I mean, obviously, we'll talk about the end scene, but prior to the famous Jason death, were there any that really stood out to you guys?
The shower one, I mean, we touched on that, where it's the head grabbing, or the hand grabbing the head was like, you know, there's no weapon. It's just the sheer force of Jason, which is neat.
How does it work again with the guy in the Ted in the movie? Like, does it come through the screen?
He stabs him from the sheet that they're watching the movie on
in the back of the head,
which is kind of neat because it's you know, so at this point in the movie, this guy is just like probably the biggest loser of this whole group because he's like five
the
beers
twins
in
and girls.
Well, he's just sitting on this armchair like five beers in and smoking a joint by himself, just like watching porn and. Like old porn movies.
Like,
and
at eventually that point, like 50-year-old porn or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And he's like so stoned or whatever. By this point, he like gets up and he like stands next to the screen where it's being projected on. And he's like, ooh, like he's trying to like interact with the woman on the screen. And then if I remember right, that's when the knife comes from behind the screen and kills him.
Yeah.
So again, you still get, even though he's alone, he's, you know, Friday the 13th movies, they kill because of sex, you know, the team want to have sex.
It's kind of the same thing, like with
he still kind of gets that theme kind of going on.
After Crispin gets one of the twins and he's not a dead fuck, he gets stabbed. The girl in the I guess she says he's the virgin or doesn't really have sex, she gets killed after I guess having sex in the shower kind of thing. So it's like right afterward they're like, Jason is like, I don't like this conservative values.
That's one thing we didn't mention. Like, there's a fairly considerable amount of TNA in this movie too.
More so than the other ones. Like a lot of butts and like
a lot
guy
of butts,
and
a lot of
girl
boobs.
Butts
and guy butts too.
And there's something about it that like it didn't feel like sexy. Like it just felt like I don't know. Just like they're enjoying being naked and like running around. It felt, I got more like nudist colony vibes than like. It wasn't shot in like a way where I feel like there was a shot, I think it's in the first Friday the 13th, where it just like lingers on a girl's butt for like a long time. I think she's like, I don't think she's naked, but it,
no, it's
the like,
second one. I think it's the second.
You know what I'm talking about? And there's no shots like that in this one.
The only one that's really kind of like that a little bit. Is I'd say like probably the only like gratuitous maybe thing is that girl. Maybe it's just because it's so stupid and it's very typical of her going out in the middle of the night and getting totally naked and going
skinny dipping,
muddy,
to get back at her boyfriend.
Yeah,
is that right before she dies? Is that the kill
she
in
dies
the lake?
In the raft.
Yeah,
she's like hanging out in the raft. But
and that one's kind of like a little behind the scenes thing. That's kind of one of those like. It gets into sort of one of those like fucked up 80s filmmaking things. So one thing with the Friday 13th movies, it seemed like they were usually filmed like in winter for whatever reason. I don't know why. So when she's like going out naked into this lake, it is freezing cold. Like, and there are moments, I think you see her breath as well. It's supposed to, you think it's supposed to be like in the summer, but it's freezing cold. And she's just sitting out there naked in this raft. Like, ironically, and it was one of those things I say it gets into like sleazy 80s filmmaking. Apparently the director like didn't seem all that concerned, you know? He's like, "Eh, whatever, you got to be naked." You know, that type of thing. And ironically, of all people, Ted White, the guy who played Jason, was the one who's like, "All right, you got to fucking give her like a blanket or some shit cuz this is fucking nuts." Like this, you hear about things like this happening. I don't know if you guys watched that documentary Electric Boogaloo, the making of like Canon films and all that stuff. They get into like sleazy filmmaking of low budget productions in the 80s. And this is kind of one of those things where it's like, but you gotta be, no, we're not gonna give you a blanket. You gotta be naked. We gotta see your titties. You know, we gotta see the light beaming off your breast. You know,
well,
shit like that.
The crazy thing is that this is a Paramount movie. It's a
well, yes and no. Oh, like, I think that if I'm not mistaken, I think the first three or four Friday the 13th movies were more or less independently made and Paramount distributed them.
Okay.
Like, I think if in the beginning of the movie, it says, like, just like produced by Terror Inc. or something like that, or Jason Inc.
Terror.
Like, basically, like, the first movie was an independent film and Paramount just distributed it. But anyway, I want to touch on something real quick. It's not a beef, but it's a little counterpoint. Mike, you said earlier that there are no sexy nude scenes in this movie. I would disagree. There's one... Mike's rolling his eyes like, here we go. We almost went the whole episode without getting sleazy, but here we are.
Just do the next half an hour on the move.
No, I think there is a scene.
I'm gonna go back to cleaning this front of the store, Dave. You can keep talking about this.
No, I think there is a scene that's meant to be like titillating and not just like you said. I think you summed it up perfectly. It feels like they're just like a nudist colony or something. But there is a scene like the shower scene when they're having sex in the shower and you see that butt like press up against the glass. Like that's supposed to be sexy, I think. Arguably, am I right? Why are you looking up at the ceiling like, well, let me think about this. It's shower sex. How is it not sexy?
I guess, but it's still different than the other movies where again,
yeah,
I'm true. Thinking again of Friday's, the second part, where it's literally the entire screen is filled with a butt. This is...
It's butt cam. It's
not quite that level.
It's somewhat tasteful for these movies, even though there is a lot of it. Tasteful nudity.
I guess you're fair. I guess that's fair to say, because in that scene, the glass is fogged up, so you're only getting like an imprint of an ass. It's not like you're just full on seeing.
It's
them
not even clear like whose butt fucking. It is. I mean, I think it is, but it's, you know, it's not totally obvious, and you know, it's just sort of a butt against glass.
I love that. That's one of the great mysteries of this movie. You know, it's not really clear whose butt it is.
It's more like that scene is going back to the Jaws metaphor. It is the ding 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 ding. It's the beginning of the theme
yeah.
kicking in. Is those kids doing it in the shower? I don't know. So it's just kind of the same thing. You're like, oh no, that's why it's maybe not sexy, because you're just like, oh, these kids are about to get it. Don't
do you think
it.
Jason has like a sort of sixth sense for like when teens are about to do that? Like yeah,
he's like a bear. You can smell them.
Yeah.
You
know? He's like, oh. I must kill.
He smells like the pheromones or something. Is
yeah.
That what
you're yeah. He's a freak.
Well, you mentioned, so like we've been talking about kind of the more sleazier elements of this movie. Let's talk about the thing that I think, again, makes this the best Friday the 13th. One of the elements that does. And it's, I think, the relatability of the Jarvis family. Like, I really like that dynamic, because I really like that they, and I really like that they introduce a kid to the series. Now, ordinarily, that is almost never a good thing. Like, we're going to put a kid in the movie. That's almost always a death knell to your movie or series. But in this instance, I think it works, because like you said, Mike, these movies, I think by this point, they knew who their audience was. They knew that kids of Corey Feldman's age in this movie were probably sneaking into these films and watching them. So having a little kid in this movie, I think ups the stakes, and also yeah. kind of like gives a character that age group can relate to, I think. Like honestly, I remember watching this movie as a kid, and when you see him playing like video games and he has like the masks and stuff, I thought that shit was cool. I'm like, oh, cool. You know what I mean? It was like,
it's
you
pretty
were
funny
in the movie
too.
As a kid.
It's
yeah, that was a very like, I referenced earlier the beginning of this movie feeling a little bit like a Spielberg kind of thing. That I felt like was a very Spielberg move to have like the
yeah,
quick shot of the kid in the monster mask. But he's just, you know, a kid with a mask. And
yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, the moment he says something, I can't remember the lines in it. When he comes, his mom's kind of calling for him, and he's kind of standing there in that goofy, like, alien mask. But it's good.
He's, is it when she asks him to get a haircut?
That's
oh,
it,
mom.
Yeah. And that's another foreshadowing moment too for him cutting his hair at the end.
Can we talk about that? Because that I don't understand that. It was really weird.
You're basically, I think you're just led to assume that every final girl, or in this case, kid character, has a child psychology degree, because otherwise it makes no goddamn sense.
No, it does. He was reading the newspapers, and he's just like, so well, he's basically...
Okay, but wait, walk me through it, though. He read the newspapers, so he... What? What led
so
to Corey Feldman in short shorts and a bald head, like, somehow stopping
Jason? Yeah, that's supposed to be like Jason seeing himself as a kid, like remembering himself.
That was supposed to be Jason?
Yeah, that's
why was he wearing
like
makeup and stuff?
Because he was in the lake.
Well, he's looking at the newspaper clippings of the artist's rendition of young Jason.
He was like a freak again, kid being made fun of at the camps that got pushed in the lake by the camp.
Yeah, it really brings up one of the two big questions in this movie, the first one being whose ass was it in the shower? it's the question of, like, how the hell do you make that jump of looking at, oh, he's a kid who drowned, I guess. I got it. I will make myself look like young Jason and just, like, appeal to him, his younger self, I guess?
There's like a step that's missing in this, I feel like. Like, there's, like, one more thing they needed to, like, seal this and make it.
Like there had to be a scene, like, earlier in the movie where something, like, triggers Jason and someone, like, catches it. And then they use that later.
Yeah, maybe something like that. That would have helped. It was just, weird
that was what we
out
had
left
in
field.
The second movie with him the final girl dressing up at, like, Pamela Bourne.
Yeah, but she was established as being a child psychology major. It makes sense in her context.
It also
makes
more sense
movie.
That he would react to his mom, like, that, like, because he has mom issues. But why would he react to, like, why would seeing himself make him stop?
I don't remember. He remembers that he was once a boy as well. I don't know. Just like,
okay.
Like, he forgot his past.
I almost feel like they're like there's just as much of a chance he would, like, see it and, like, kill, because, like, I hate myself kind of thing, or, like, I'm gonna kill myself, or I don't want to see that. It reminds me of my human past.
Well, what should he, should, like, Corey Feldman came down the stairs dressed as, like, old Jason then or something?
He should have just ran away.
Is he wearing, like, platform shoes and shit?
He needed a cool little moment. The kid, we've been kind of establishing this little smart, little artistic, weird kid. You know, we need to do something with him.
Do you think I was really impressed that he, like, knew how to shave, like, because he seems young, and I'm guessing this is the first time he's ever, like, shaved before. And, you know, it wasn't the best job, but did okay.
You mean his head?
Yeah, his head.
Well, I really liked how, speaking of that, I really liked how he had some strands of hair still on his head. You know what I mean? He didn't do a perfect job. There were still some strands of hair.
And there's, like, little like, red spots where he nicked himself and stuff. That was a good, like, I hope it was an effect. I hope they didn't just, like, haphazardly shave his head.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. he kind of reminds me of, I can't remember how it, the flashbacks are in the other movies, but I remember in Freddy vs. Jason, there's a flashback of Jason getting thrown in the lake, and he looks a lot like how Corey Feldman looks, if I remember correctly. Do you remember that, Dave?
Well, yeah, he's and in the first movie, in the flashback, he's, like, deformed. But again, the question is, like, why would he make that leap to be like, I'll look like young Jason, and then that'll freeze him? But it's, you know what's funny? As we say all this, as we question this, as a kid watching this, I never questioned this moment. As a kid, it was like it was perfectly seamless. It's
what,
like,
a genius!
That makes sense.
It's like kid logic. Yeah. Is there, like, maybe there is a setup? Is, like, is the game he's playing in the beginning have, like, a foreshadowing?
It's Zaxxon. It's just like a Sega arcade game where you shoot. You're in a ship.
I don't know. I'm just trying to say, is there anything, any kind of little foreshadowing?
No, the only foreshadowing there is when he's looking at that guy's newspaper clippings and he notices, like, deformed Jason. He's like, aha, for some reason he has this eureka moment, like, aha, I'll make myself look like young Jason. Which will, I guess, distract him so that my sister can, like, chop him up, I guess. I don't know.
Is there an implication at the end of this movie, too, that, like, Corey Feldman has now become a potential new Jason?
Yes, the big, like, sort of twist ending in this movie.
If Shia LaBeouf, you know, he probably would have, you know, become a huge star. Then.
Well, it's so this is more for, I guess, for Mike's benefit and anyone who's unfamiliar with the subsequent sequels, but that was basically the idea. Like, Jason, like, he would become, like, you know, traumatized and he would become the killer. They chickened out. They ultimately didn't do that. The fifth movie, if we ever watch it, which, I mean, there's always a Friday the 13th every year, Mike. We'll get to it eventually. But long story short, they chicken out. They don't do that. And I think they kind of squander that opportunity because given that the next movie is called A New Beginning, I feel like that would have been the perfect opportunity to take the franchise in maybe a slightly different direction, but
maybe
ultimately I think people were pissed off that Jason was not the real killer in the next movie. And they ended up bringing him back Frankenstein style in part six. Oh, sorry, Mike.
Yeah, and it is Tommy Jarvis in part six, and he's more of like, I need to make sure he's dead or something, and digs up his grave and accidentally, you know,
brings him back to life.
Yeah, and
accidentally Frankensteins him.
So, it's really kind of weird, but it's funny though. It's cartoony and really doesn't take itself seriously at all, but.
And I think that's that movie's strongest trait, is that it doesn't take itself seriously. Yeah, sex. But anyway, we'll get there at some point.
Yeah, but it's a good watch. It's just it's totally lost any kind of like kind of creepazoid.
I've said this every episode, but I really want to watch Jason X. That's the one I'm most interested in.
Until you've watched it, and then maybe you'll be like, maybe we should have watched that.
I mean, on paper, it sounds great. All I know is he goes to space. That's the only thing I know about.
Oh, man. Classic last words, Mike. I mean, on paper, it sounded like a good idea.
I want to revisit Freddy versus Jason.
I really enjoy that movie. I thought some people may think it's too goofy. I think they perfectly nailed what that movie should have been.
Yeah. It's so weird. Such a weird idea and weird setup. It's like so stupid, but at the same time, it's a good time. That was when I snuck in. Love it.
Anywho, but yeah, aside from Corey's questionable his head scratching logic as to how he defeats Jason at the end, like I think aside from, you know, in addition to what we mentioned before, Crispin Glover and like the better filmmaking and all that stuff, like I think Corey is like one of the main ingredients that makes this movie great. Like just that whole scene of him, like again, like Crispin. So actually I would put this out there. You asked if there were any good actors in this movie. I think Corey Feldman is the best actor in this movie. Crispin is doing interesting stuff, and he's good in that sense. But if I'm talking just flat-out acting, playing a character, I think Corey Feldman is the most natural. Like that scene when he's looking at the TNA across the, you know, across from his bed or whatever.
It was weird that you were literally doing the same thing while we were watching the movie.
Yeah, that's why, like, listeners out there, that's why these guys are always rolling their eyes. Every time I see a boob, I'm like, but no, I feel like that is a legit reaction for a kid his age seeing that stuff. Like, he doesn't know why he is enjoying it. He just, you know, he just knows that he does. And, like, he doesn't know how to react, so that's why he does, like, this thing where he, like, jumps on the back of his bed and just starts, like, kicking his legs out, like, he does, like, a curly impression, like, he doesn't know why. It's so great because he does these reactions, yeah, he gyrates, and then, like, each gyration ends with him like at some point he's on all fours looking like, wow, this is great, I can't believe this. And it's just like, yeah, exactly, whoa. And then he goes back to bed. He does that thing that every kid does, you know, when they're doing something they're not supposed to, when they hear their mom or dad come in through the door, if you're watching Friday the 13th, you collapse on your bed and you pretend to be asleep.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he is the best actor in the movie. He's the most, I think, natural. And yeah, like he's one of the more memorable things of this, not only this movie, but I think of the series. Like when I think Friday the 13th, like aside from the character of Jason and like his mother, it's like, what other characters are there that are memorable in the series other than like Corey Feldman?
Kevin Bacon. Yeah,
and Crispin. Yeah, but that's only because he became popular later.
I know. That was a joke. He's not that.
It's not like he's great in that first movie.
I'm trying to think of any of them, really. I mean, you remember faces. Like, you remember, like, but it's mostly like the kills, like that fat kid in the next one, you know?
Like the fat kid in the next one.
Like his face when he, like, gets
what
killed.
What a character.
And, like, you don't remember, like, the character, actually, but just kind of like, I don't know, like the guy in the wheelchair falling down the stairs. It's like things like that. Like just that's their character. You know.
Well, speaking of characters, one that we haven't really discussed specifically about, we've kind of talked around him, but the character of Jason in this movie. He's played by a veteran stuntman at the time, Ted White, who was actually a double for John Wayne in his heyday. So it's interesting. The guy playing Jason in this movie, he's a big guy. He was, you know, a stuntman like the Jasons always were. But he was actually in, I believe, his 50s or possibly even 60s when he did this movie. So yeah, he's an older guy. And as a kid, I think this was probably my favorite Jason. Because in the movie, Jason in this movie is like, I think he's super imposing. He's busting through walls. And just his, it's just the fact that, like, again, we've talked about maybe he's supernatural, maybe he isn't. They're like, when you look at him, he's so close to being a zombie that he may as well be a zombie. Like, when you see his hands, they're like, really, they look like mutant hands. And, like, his fingers are all dirty and shit.
Yeah, his, it's big, too. He, like, his hand.
He's very big, yeah.
I forgot all about this, but that's probably the best scare in the movie is him coming through the window at Corey Feldman and grabbing it, probably, right?
I think so. Yeah, I would agree.
The next one's not really has anything. Kind of like these actually kind of like spooky things like that happen. He's big. He's cool. I like him. I mean, like we've talked about it before, that Baghead Jason's always a favorite of ours. But...
And then, I think just, you know, I think just for as far as his performance as Jason, I think he's the right amount of intimidating. He's like the perfect size and bulkiness to him that makes him intimidating, I think.
It seems like from six on, kind of just more of like the silent sort of shark type Jason. That makes sense. Like they show him a lot.
Yeah. Like this would be the last Jason who would run in a movie.
Huh. So he becomes like less mobile?
Well, he's a full-on zombie. He's a full-on zombie in the other movies.
But he can teleport. Shit.
But he can teleport, which makes up for his slowness.
Can he really teleport? Like,
that's the only explanation as to how he is able to catch up with people who are running away from him as he is slowly walking after them. It's actually one of the funnest parts of the video game that would come decades later. The fact that they flat out say, if you're playing as the character of Jason, you can teleport to places. Because otherwise, it makes no sense why he just catches up to people all of a sudden.
He got on a little moped.
Well, I didn't have any more talking points on Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Did you guys?
No, just other than it's a good time. I think it's a good entry point to the series because it sort of has all the tropes. But still enjoyable and fun. There's fun characters and people to hate. and I don't think they get... Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a goofy movie. It's, you know, it's not no Ghost Cat, but it's pretty good.
Not a lot is, Ryan.
I liked it. I was glad we watched it, and I was happy to, like, enjoy one of these movies.
So it sounds like recommendations across the board.
Gets a recommendation from me.
All right.
We didn't even talk about the title exploding in the beginning. That's a
joke. Doesn't the title always explode?
Yeah, but
it exploded in the second one. In the third one, it was 3D. But yeah, this one, like the hockey mask comes in. It comes from the background and just blows up the Friday the 13th logo, and it's the final chapter. That's when you know things are serious, when shit's exploding.
Yep.
It also is a hint at a bigger budget, too. More explosions, bigger budget.
Yeah.
This is probably one of the highest grossing ones, I think. Like, do you think
that? I think at the time, technically the first one was the highest grossing. And then after that, you know, they were all within maybe 5 million or so of the first one. So they were all around this. They all grossed kind of close to the previous movie. It was after this one where they would start their box office decline.
Mm. Yeah, it's on top
but
of the
thing
world.
With it is, it's like... Yeah, the box office is still declining, but these movies are dirt cheap to make. So even if they don't make a ton of money, it's still a huge profit for us. So fuck it. We'll just keep churning this shit out.
Send them to space.
Send them to space. Send them to hell. Let them fight Freddy. What else you got? Get in here, kid. Give me a pitch for a new Jason film.
It's crazy that we have it. I mean, they had that remake kind of reboot sort of sequel-esque thing, like, a, you know... like 10 years ago now, and it's crazy that they haven't come back with it again. Keep talking about
it'll always come back. Like there's probably now, even now in the wasteland, some production is in development of a Friday the 13th movie. You just cannot kill this franchise.
Can we be in it? I want to be in it.
Sure. Well, the question will be, are you going to show your butt, Ryan? Otherwise, they might not cast you in the movie.
You know?
Yeah, get a little man butt in the movie.
Yeah.
It's always appreciated.
Why not?
But that's going to do it for this latest Friday the 13th installment of Apocalypse Video. I'm glad we were able to finally turn... The franchise was finally able to turn you around, Mike. I'm glad you're on board now.
I am. I'm glad to be on board.
Well, you can check out for any of the Friday the 13th movies at Apocalypse Video. Come in here and rent them. And if you like what you're hearing, give us a like on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. It's all on Apocalypse Video. Those are the handles and all that stuff. You can also shoot us an email at apocalypsevideopod@gmail.com. Let us know what your favorite Friday the 13th is. Like, who's the most unlikable character in this movie? Was it not Axel? Was it Corey Feldman? Was he the most annoying character? Let us know. We want to hear
from you. Let us know what your favorite Friday the 13th is and why it's Jason X.
And be sure to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. We want to hear from you. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Apocalypse Video. I'm shocked that it didn't end with somebody getting killed or some horrible thing happening. Everything actually turned out okay in the end.
Just like this movie, everything turned out okay.
Exactly.
Hey, Mike, where's the corkscrew?
He's killing me! He's killing me!
A dead fuck? A lousy lay. You know? A dead
pet. Oh, I see. Oh, don't hold it back for me, Doc. I can take it. Give it to me straight.
I did not say it. The computer did.
Yeah, well, there is no computer.
Aha! And there's no Betty, either.
And I'm a dead fuck. Like I said, the computer don't lie. God, I'm horny.